Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to all our listeners. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Mliwa Gavaza, and for today, it is a Friday, which means we get into the economics news of the week, and it's been quite a busy week. The big news of the week expected by many was that we are moving to level one. There was a family meeting on Wednesday night, and there was that announcement. So that's what we're mainly going to be focusing on. And some of the other decisions and, you know, news flow that has come out in the last couple of days. We'll touch briefly on it. So on the line, we are joined by Dr. Martin Davies, who is Managing Director of Emerging Markets and Africa at Deloitte, and he's going to be helping us to unpack some of what's been going on. Dr. Martin, greetings to you.
Yeah, hi, Mliwa. Thank you very much for the kind invitation. Good to be chatting to you.
Thank you so much for taking your time to be with us. I think, you know, as a good point of departure, we are moving into level one. Whether it's the right time, the wrong time, you know, what do you make of this move that we're getting into as from next week?
Yeah, certainly. I think it's certainly welcomed by business. And I think even in recent months, the levels have become increasingly vague in terms of how they're defined and what impact they really have on the economy. But as I've always recently been saying, is that the lockdowns, economic shutdowns, if you will, are the luxury of the developed world, certainly not the aspirational developing such as ourselves. Regardless of what the infection rates are or not, I think it was an absolutely essential and imperative that that we move towards a state of, dare I say, normalization of economic activity in our country.
I think, you know, on this issue of moving to level one, some people have actually said, guys, this is actually not a level one that we're on, that this is more a, I think, to borrow a term that I saw on social media, someone said this is level two pro plus, because there are still one or two restrictions that are in place. Do you see these impeding, I guess, businesses' ability to, you know, continue doing business as normal, or are those things likely to just be, you know, affecting more the social aspects of life, you know, such as the curfew?
I think it's more of a latter. Business is incredibly flexible and also, I would argue, responsible. And I think what I've seen in recent months, all companies, clients that we deal with have been incredibly responsible around managing this pandemic effectively. And I think perhaps more trust could have been presented from government side to corporates, particularly in manufacturing, particularly in mining, throughout the early stages of this pandemic. Maybe we can talk about that later, perhaps, and the impact. But I think it'll become more of a social phenomenon. It's about, you know, trusting the individual to behave in a responsible fashion. And I think that certainly is what we expect going forward. So the social distancing, the face masks, and the like. I think undoubtedly that should continue. But at a business level, it's business will be agile, but the challenge is to really start getting heavily impacted sectors, particularly think those which are, you know, tourism, sort of travel related, moving as soon as possible. But I'm afraid it'll take quite a long time for the international market to recover. And the impact of a shutdown will certainly be with us for a long time to come.
And then also on that front, because you guys are one of the biggest, advisory firms, you know, around the world, and certainly in South Africa operating in this particular market, how have you seen, you know, the evolution of discussions that you have with some of your clients? Because I think for ordinary South Africans, there's this whole thing that, okay, we're moving to level one, everything will now be normal. But for businesses, is it really going to be business as normal? You've just touched on the fact that international travel might take some time to recover, for example. So for businesses, what type of concerns are you seeing in terms of some of the engagements that you're having?
Very, very valid question. I think initially there was two things. If we rewind back to March, two things were important. It was the well-being of employees, and it was the protection of cash. So cash and people, effectively. I think we're starting to see a change now that is coming. You know, the employee side has been well looked after and taken care of and will continue to be regulated. The cash side, of course, cash is king, still remains. But we're seeing, you know, with people often talk about the sort of shape of a recovery in terms of what letter of the alphabet will it mimic. Will it be a V-shaped recovery? Will it be a so-called U-shape and W-shape, or even L-shape? Many people have been debating this. I think the most accurate letter, what I'm seeing going forward, is the F shape. And that means F stands for frugal. So we're seeing now whether this is, you know, we have this paradoxical situation where to be able to grow the economy, we need to spend as a group of corporates in this country and particularly government as well. But at the same time, frugality is needed, an individual sort of protecting shareholder value perspective. So how does one marry these conflicting imperatives? But going forward, I think it's, you know, we are undoubtedly in many sectors going to be feeling it's going to be a period of stagnation, and companies, of course, will be seeking to become far more aware of costs, through workforce costs, but office costs, particularly amongst many other things. So I think it's a time of repositioning, and South Africa, I'm afraid, faces a. I did some rough calculations a few weeks ago. And it's quite concerning when one looks at how do we project, when will we get back to 2019 effective? That was the question. When will we get back to 2019? It's not about growth, it's about levels, the level of GDP in 2019. And if we use a rearview mirror perspective, what was the growth trend in South Africa over the last 5 years? Let's average that out and then put it in sort of take the same figure from 2020 onwards going forward. And we will recover if the last 5 years has been a trend, which was quite an enabling period in the global economy, to be honest, certainly not like now, which is very disabling, arguably. We will face a lost decade with GDP only recovering to 2019 levels come 2028 on that analysis. So that's a lost decade for the country, I'm afraid, all things being equal. It really talks to a new growth model is needed. And that is something which needs to be the tone of which and the action of which needs to be set by the state, of which business will ultimately, hopefully, be the recipient of.
It certainly does sound, from what you're saying, that South Africa does have this, can I call it an opportunity, or is facing a moment where, if ever there was a time, to be implementing any reforms or to be rethinking the economy, this would be that time. But I want to move away from that just for a moment to perhaps touch on some of the other things that have been announced this week very briefly. What's your take just on some of the consumer-focused information that's coming out, such as retail sales, and then maybe your thoughts just around the interest rate decision that's come up?
Certainly. Well, retail sales, I see, were down somewhat, and was it 9%? I think it was last month. That's to be expected. The consumer is under pressure. There's a sort of a consolidation of retail taking place. Of course, new channels towards retail, and I still find it. What's the word? Incredulous that e-commerce could have been banned effectively by government for a period during this lockdown, when I'm not aware of any other country in the world which actually did that. So some of this is also, as per usual, self-inflicted wounds, I'm afraid. But we're seeing, despite that banning of commerce and restrictions on restrictions in many cases placed on retail sector, we are seeing a bounce back in terms of, but for more sort of high value products, automobiles and sort of more sort of, durable type products, we're seeing a, significant hit. And forecast this year, we're looking maybe a 30% roughly, give or take, decline of new car sales. And that really does speak to the health or lack thereof of a South African consumer. On the interest rate front, I think there was somewhat disappointment of the interest rate levels, albeit, very much, almost historic lows in South Africa, but still very high compared to the rest of the world. We're seeing a total rethink of monetary policy, I think, generally, and the question of the role of the Reserve Bank. Now, I'm a strong proponent of the independence of the Reserve Bank above all else, and to be shielded from all political influence. However, I think our Reserve Bank has been very conservative in years gone by, and perhaps, but I think also, will some respite on interest rates really buoy the economy or drive the economy forward? No, it won't. Structural reforms will. So if we expect renewed growth to come from slightly lower cost of capital, I'm afraid that remains wishful thinking.
You know, against the backdrop of, those pieces of information, the fact that we do have a very strained consumer at the moment, I'm keen to get your thoughts. You know, I think this is more a chicken, whether, the egg or the chicken sort of question, which comes first type of question. But in terms of the recovery going forward, whatever shape it ends up being in, do you think the recovery is going to be a consumer-led recovery or a business-led recovery? Because there seems to be that duality that on both fronts, you have these players that sort of work in tandem with each other. And at the moment, consumers are constrained, which means businesses are constrained. But if businesses adjust the way that they operate in some cases, it might give some impetus to consumers to perhaps engage a bit more. Where do you see those things going?
Anyway, let me be slightly argumentative, if I may. I don't think it'll come from either business or consumer. It'll come from state-led recovery. But I don't mean state-led in terms of interventionist. I mean state-led by liberalizing the economy. What I mean by this is the only real substantive suggestion around providing a new driver for growth that I've heard from the state is so-called infrastructure spend. Now, our gross fixed capital formation spend in this country is abysmal. It has been arguably since 2008, when our gross fixed capital formation spend, i.e. investment to GDP, peaked around 23% roughly of GDP. Now, any country spending below 25, the sweet spot is 25 to 35% a year as a really aspirational. That's giving you an arguably a baked 3% GDP a year before you even start doing anything else. Successful countries always invest. They don't spend, they invest into enabling infrastructure, and the like. We are spending currently probably below 20, which is even below the sub-Saharan African average. So there's no excuse over the course of the last decade and a half, maybe even longer, why South Africa should not have grown significantly more through, particularly when global tailwinds and capital was far more confident in our economy, to have greater infrastructure spend, real proper infrastructure. Think ports, more efficient ports, i.e. private ones. Railway lines, think private ones, linking ports to mining assets. Think sizable, good infrastructure projects, think rail, think the likes of, think process infrastructure, think Gautrain infrastructure. This is a type of good infrastructure that the country should have been spending on, but did not. So to be able to really to unlock, and that's the key phrase here, this potential of growth, one needs to liberalize the monopolistic practices of the SOEs to allow private capital to play in infrastructure in many of the spaces and sectors I just mentioned. That will be a good start, but I think this notion of saying, well, will it be consumer-led? I don't think so. Will it be business-led? Well, business takes instruction and not instruction, but it awaits for action, at least, from the state towards to create this environment for growth, at least, the oxygen for the economy. That's the job of the state. The only positive here we have, but I can really, beyond our domestic issues that I can talk to, is the V-shaped recovery that's happening in Asia, driven by China. So you see commodity prices are very, very high. And as I've recently said, is that what we're seeing in China now, I was in China in 2009, Q1, post Lehman Brothers, and the Chinese government, not to the same extent at all, which was very much of a sort of bazooka spend back in 2009 to recover from a global or Western financial crisis. But we're seeing the stimulus in China put in place, which is supporting our commodity prices. Unfortunately, we're not really benefiting sufficiently as we could be from that, because of these binding constraints in domestic infrastructure, particularly on the Transnet side, ports, rail, and efficiency, and the like. So that's where growth is going to come from. But then growth will also come from giving confidence back to capital. And that's more of a political play than often it is just a policy play as well.
You know, as you're talking, it really makes one wonder, like, how South Africa has sort of done within the context of, I guess, the rest of its regional peers on the one end, and then in relation to, you know, some of its trading partners, one of the biggest of which is China. Do you anticipate to see, I guess, a ramping up of trade with China, businesses in South Africa trading a bit more, and maybe us as a country getting to benefit in that V-shaped recovery that you're talking about that's happening on the other side of the world with one of our biggest trading partners?
The only players will really benefit really are going to be the commodity players, and we're seeing that already, the mining players. And South Africa remains, unfortunately, a commodity-driven economy. Roughly 60%, two-thirds roughly of our export basket is raw minerals, commodities, and that's fine. But it's, you know, to really step up as a country, we need to be more innovative, more dynamic, more and focus on the likes of, you know, growing manufacturing, growing technology. That's the recipe for developmental success. So yeah, maybe I should also mention, if you hold shares in Tencent, then China's recovery is great, or Naspers rather. But the real play, really, it's you know, South Africa has not been a recipient of Chinese capital and infrastructure in this country for numerous reasons. But we certainly feel and benefit from the tailwind from a commodities play. And last point on this, perhaps, Madiwe, is that I find it frustrating that policy decisions in Beijing are having more impact on our economy than policy decisions or lack thereof made in Pretoria.
You certainly make you know, quite an interesting point, and I'm pretty sure that our finance minister would have been sitting here and applauding you saying something like that, given some of the statements that he's made at his various budget speeches this year. But I want to, you know, perhaps end off this discussion getting your take. I understand that you recently did something just around what you're calling the 3 D's of a post-COVID-19 economy?
Yes, thanks, Madiwa. I wrote a piece recently for the World Economic Forum, and I called it the 3 D's of a post-COVID economy, as you allude to. The first one is sort of deglobalization. And for those of us who travel a lot, we certainly feel that. But more importantly, we're seeing this contraction in global trade. I mean, not, of course, it's a demand-side issue. It's also disruption of multilateral institutions around trade. Think, again, trade disruption driven by a very hawkish Republican administration under Donald Trump and the like. So we see this deglobalization and localization to an extent around value chains. But, you know, let's not have this knee-jerk comment and saying, well, oh, localization, value chains, let's make PPE stuff. It's far more deeper than that. PPE is a short play. It's, oh, how do you really sort of, you know, do a Vietnam effect? Where's the Vietnams in Africa emerging, i.e. Southeast Asian economies that are picking up significant amounts of employment creation, value-adding investment from China into their own economies? Think Thailand, Indonesia, Vietnam, and the like. Where are similar countries emerging in Africa take advantage of this fragmented supply chain issue? The second is debt, where you know, debt is very suppressive on growth, and how countries, I know this could be South Africa, but many other countries in the emerging world, particularly how debt suppresses growth in the countries, and how do sovereigns start to create new growth models despite this impact of debt on negative impact of debt on the economies. And of course, this will come through from structural reform, as we've been discussing. The third D I call digitization, and this is kind of, it's a very all-encompassing word, but it one talks towards companies adopting digital technologies to boost their competitiveness, reducing costs, becoming more agile, and really rethinking their business models. And through these three levels, if you will, digitization, debt, and deglobalization, these are the big three thematic issues that we at Deloitte are clearly thinking about and supporting our clients through this very, very challenging period. Thank you.
As you're talking, I'm just reflecting on the first and second D's that you mentioned and just wondering to myself, do you think that on a fundamental level, that some of the speculation that's being thrown around that COVID-19, the different lockdowns, has really brought to an end the era of globalization? Do you think that's, really what's going to be happening? Because that also then speaks to the issue of debt, because with greater travel around the world over centuries, there's also been an exporting of capital as well, export and import of capital. So do you think that is happening? Is this really the end of globalization, or are people just, as you say, having knee-jerk reactions to what's going on?
I don't think it's an end at all. Let me come up with a perhaps more suitable synonym than deglobalization. Maybe it's marginalization. Increased marginalization of many developing countries globally. We'll see the heartland of a global economy, which is predominantly almost all in the Northern Hemisphere, the United States, EU, China. We will see increasingly a rapid marginalization of the Southern Hemisphere by and large, where there's an increased inward-looking nature in all three of these regions I mentioned. And you see it already in terms of the what I call G2, think US, China, think Europe, post-Brexit, and an inward-looking sort of mentality, very different to what we saw arguably pre-2008, but now become more apparent post-2020. And this raises key issues for Africa, particularly South Africa, where we have a geographic comparative disadvantage. We are on the southern tip of a continent, and our nearest economic competitor arguably is probably about at least an 8 hours flying time distance away. So the question is then how do we maintain relevance? How do we maintain an interest of capital? I'm not just talking financial capital here, of course, but most importantly, and far more important, intellectual capital, i.e. people. And I think the state needs to really, really consider this, because marginalization ultimately results in irrelevance. And I think South Africa needs to take a very, very strong rethink as to its place in the world and how to make itself attractive to capital. And I don't just mean financial capital here, as alluded to. We're in exactly the opposite situation as we were circa April 1994, where the global political economy was looking at us. I think now the world has changed dramatically. Best our thinking and geopolitical thinking changed too.
So South Africa needs to, really reimagine or rethink, or at least take time to think about its relevance and place in the global economy. That's us with Dr. Martin Davies, who is the Managing Director of Emerging Markets at Deloitte. And he was just giving us some insight into, some of the week's top economics news, starting off with the fact that we are moving to level one and what that will mean for the economy. He was giving us some insights into some of the discussions or some of the conversations that corporates are having, also giving his thoughts just around where the economic recovery will come from. And he's advocating for a state-led recovery, because he's just saying that this will not be consumer-led, and a lot of the time business takes a lot of direction from the state. Also just ending off talking about how South Africa's positioned relevant and in comparison to its trading partners and the rest of the world, and going forward, the type of trade that is likely to happen, because this might not necessarily be the end of globalization as a lot of alarmists would make people believe. So thank you so much to Dr. Martin Davies for joining us.
This is Mudiwa's Take.
A very fascinating discussion and a lot to unpack from our conversation with Dr. Martin Davies. But I think for me, the big one is that the move to level one in South Africa and the reopening of borders sort of highlights this issue of globalization, because a lot of people are thinking about traveling. A lot of people are thinking about if you were, you know, waiting to, you know, start trading again for those businesses that haven't been able to be exporting, you know, this is the time. So it brings that globalization discussion to the fore. And I really liked what Dr. Martin was saying just around the fact that this might not necessarily be the end of globalization. And I tend to agree with that view. Just adding the fact that from where I'm sitting, it does seem as if what's going to happen or emerge from the COVID-19 pandemic is that when all is said and done, we found our vaccines and COVID-19 just becomes one of the normal flus that people get within the course of ordinary life. It's no longer the factor that it is now. What will be the structure of the global economic superpowers? I think there's no other words I can use from there. You heard Dr. Martin talking about what he calls the G2, which is the US and China. And that's really where things are, because when you look at some of the tensions going on between the US and China, some of the decisions that have been taken as a result, for example, TikTok now being forced to be, at least a part of its business, to be sold off to a US-based company, for example. All of those issues where you have big countries, I guess, flexing the economic muscle. But more importantly, at the end of the day, when you see a country like the US having its citizens not being allowed to travel to many parts of the world, and the way that that country has handled it, how will its place be in the global economy? Yes, they'll still have the currency and still be the reserve currency, but even those things are beginning to be questioned even more on this front. So the globalization discussion, I don't think globalization is going anywhere. If anything, after this, people might be a bit more curious to actually explore the world, perhaps even do more trade with people around the world, because people have been sitting indoors and just exposing themselves a bit more with the internet about what's going on around the world. And this might be a time that people decide, okay, I'm gonna, you know, get in touch with XY business because I discovered them, you know, during lockdown. But the more important discussion, I think, will just be what the structure of that global economy will look like and where the centers of trade will be. You see countries like India positioning themselves to become the big factories. Dr. Martin was talking about the fact, like, where are the Vietnams of Africa? And when you see the way that India's positioning itself, having Apple building its some of its production facilities in that country, those types of things, how are countries thinking about their production and their place in the economy? And these are some of the discussions that South Africa really, really needs to be having if it's going to be able to, firstly, recover to pre-COVID levels and grow beyond that. So with that, we've come to the end of today's show. Thank you so much to everyone who was listening. Remember that you can find our latest podcast on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab on Twitter, where #BDSpotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. Thank you to our amazing team, our producers, our Paige Muller, and Moriehi Mashamaete. I've been Muriwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail, and this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So for myself and the rest of the team, it is good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.